Blog Talk Radio.
The 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
The Eagles are headed to the Super Bowl.
It's Wednesday, July 9th, 2014. Welcome back to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by www.shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host again tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chet Chesko. Chet, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Bill. Some hot weather up in the Philly area lately, but not so hot, I guess, when it comes to our favorite baseball team. We do, though, have lots to discuss anyway when it comes to both baseball and basketball. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a slow week here in Philadelphia sports, especially with the Phillies just struggling until the last couple nights. But we did get our first look at 76er center Nerlens Noel in the Orlando Summer League. Chase Utley was the only Philly selected at the All-Star game next Tuesday night at Target Field. The Phillies, as we said, have actually won two in a row in Milwaukee against the first-place Brewers. So we'll talk about whether you're still selling. You were selling everybody last week. We'll see what you think again this week. And we'll touch on Jonathan Papelbon being snubbed from the All-Star team. So what do you think?
Wow, two in a row for the Phillies? Yeah, sell them anyway, Ruben. Sell them.
Okay, well, we will have our www.shopforkisses.org phone lines open at 929-477-2855. So feel free to call throughout the show. We have our usual ground rules in place. We'd like to ask that all language be professional. All opinions are welcome. But please be respectful of other people's opinions. Again, for those that might want to offer a comment but don't want to call the Philly Press Box Radio Show, you can go to Philly Press Box Facebook page and send a personal message, and we'll do our best to get your comment or question on the show. Okay, Chet, we had an opportunity to see Noel in Orlando. He scored 19 points in the opener but had just two rebounds. He did add four steals in the opener against the Magic. The 76ers sat him out of Game 2 against the Thunder, and he added 8 points and six rebounds in Game 3 against the Rockets. What is your first impressions of that Nerlens Noel?
Well, for the first Noel, forgive me, I had to say that, I thought he did very well, particularly on the offensive end. 13.5 points a game, yeah, I would definitely take that. We probably won't get that in the regular season. But the key thing right now is just getting him acclimated to playing team basketball again after an 18-month layoff. Remember, until last week, he'd been doing only shooting drills and a little one-on-one or two-on-two for, I guess, several months. So getting him back to five-on-five, even if the competition isn't exactly mid-season NBA caliber, is crucial right now. I do like the fact that his rebounds and blocks went up in the second game. I like that he made more of an effort to crash the boards in his second game. And I love the fact that he's clearly worked on his free throw shooting. I believe Nerlens is 9-for-9 at the foul line through two games. This from a guy who shot only 52.9% in his lone season at Kentucky. So clearly he has been working at that as well as his outside shooting. So bottom line, an impressive early showing from Nerlens Noel, and it gives us hope anyway that he is a real NBA center who can be a key piece in the Sixers puzzle going forward. Lots of other things to talk about from that summer league action too, which we'll get to in a moment. But yeah, I'm real happy to see what Nerlens Noel has done so far in his first couple of summer league basketball games.
What was your thought on the organization decided to sit him out of game two of that little league there?
I'm sure he could have played, but, I mean, as I said, he hadn't played a game in 18 months, certainly a five-on-five. So, you know, why put him back out there 20 hours or whatever after his very first game? when it is just a summer league game. Give him the day off just to rest his bones. He did look a little gassed, quite frankly. I did watch pretty much all of that first game from Saturday against the Magic. So I think it was a smart thing to do, give him that day off and then bring him back for game three yesterday. And, you know, although he didn't score as much in the next game, I don't think they're looking for him to be a big scorer. I think it was more important for him to just get a feel for five-on-five action and in that second game of his, get to the rim a little bit more often for some rebounds. And he did that, and he also blocked more shots. I think he had, what, three or four blocks in the second game as opposed to just one in the first game. So I think that's what they're going to be looking for from him, more of a defensive presence. And just through two games, he's showing that he can certainly be that.
How important do you feel it is at this point that the lowly 76ers, whether it's rookie league, whether it's whatever it is off the 2-1 start and actually winning some games regardless of who's on the court that they have that jersey on?
And it doesn't mean a darn thing, to be honest. I mean, yeah, it's always nice to get a win. But the wins and losses don't really matter down there. It's the development of the players, particularly Nerlens Noel, but other guys too, like Jeremy Grant, who didn't play especially well the first two games, but he played quite well in the third game. He had, what, 18 points or whatever in that third game and looked more like the player that they thought he would be when they picked him at number 39 overall. KJ McDaniels out of Clemson also showing that he's got some ability. And a guy like Ronald Roberts, Jr., who was undrafted, the guy out of St. Joe's, but he was particularly impressive, especially in the first two games when he had double-figure points, and then I think he had 8 or 9 points in the third game. It was good to see that he's got a shot at making the team also. Casper Ware is a definite scorer. He was up with the Sixers for about a dozen games. I think he had 2 10-day contracts late in the season last year. This is a kid who could shoot, certainly. He can give them a little bit of that three-point shooting that they so desperately lack. So it's good to see him getting some playing time down in Orlando also. So lots of guys to keep an eye on. Unfortunately, Pierre Jackson, the guy they reacquired during draft night, got injured in his very first game. So that was certainly a blow of a pretty serious Achilles injury, I guess it was. So Pierre Jackson likely done for a while, so we won't be seeing him back on the court anytime soon. But, so far it's nice to see. The 2-1 record, like I said, doesn't mean a whole lot, but it just is good to see all these guys getting the experience of playing together and showing whether or not they can legitimately contend for a spot on the 76ers' real team come this fall.
Yeah, and I understand that, we have this team down in Orlando with about 15 players, and they're also going to send a team to the Las Vegas Summer League, which I assume will have another 15 players as well. So, and Noel, I understand at this point, is not going to be on that team. He's only on their Orlando team.
There's some confusion about that. They didn't put him on the official roster, but he indicated, and I heard some other reporters saying, that Noel will be playing out in Las Vegas. So that's still a bit of a mystery to me, whether or not he's going to be playing out there. We shall see. But, yeah, the Orlando League wraps up in the next day or two, and then another squad will be playing out in Vegas. Some of the same guys, some won't be among the same, but I'm still not sure whether Noel is going to play or not. He seemed to think he was going to play, even though they left him off the official roster for Vegas, so we'll see.
Yeah, and from my perspective, I'd like to see him go. I'd like to see him get in more games, and, unless he was injured, I don't care if he's tired, unless he was injured or had a little tweak or something, I would not have sat him out of game two in Orlando. I'd have played him just because he just needs to work, and he's getting to go against pro-level competition. As our buddy Tom Moore said several weeks back, they could have probably actually activated him before the end of the regular season. So we're talking, quite a few months ago that he was actually physically able to play. I think I'd turn the kid loose a little bit, and I wouldn't play him 48 minutes, but turn him loose a little bit against some good competition and see what he could do a little bit more.
I guess the fact just that it was only his second game and it was less than 24 hours after the first game, I think that was the thinking on that. He did look a little drained, like I said, in that first game. So I was okay with him sitting out. So you and I can agree to disagree on that one, Bill.
As we always do.
Sure.
You know, and I guess the other side of that, obviously, is everybody else on the team pretty much played. So, you know, I'd like to see him out there.
Yeah. And like I said, Jeremy Grant looked pretty impressive in his third game. The kid out of St. Joe's, Roberts, looked like he can be a contender for a spot on the Sixers roster. KJ McDaniels did some good things. So some interesting decisions will have to be made come this fall to see which of these guys can really play in the true NBA and just what kind of roster the 76ers are going to go with. You know, a lot of people are already convinced that they are going to tank another season and then really start the road up, back up a year from now. So we shall see. I don't think we're going to see Joel Embiid play at all this year, even if he is ready in January or February, like perhaps Noel could have last year. I think they're going to keep Embiid on the sidelines, just let him get 100% healthy, and then you know, try the Twin Towers thing a year from this October. So that's going to be something to keep an eye on as the season develops.
Yeah, you know, there's all kinds of – well, two things, I guess. One is the fan reaction to this whole way the Sixers are doing business has actually been overall pretty surprisingly good, I think. The fans seem to be on board with what Hinkie is trying to do here, and they seem like they're willing to be more than patient. Now, with that, I don't know if they're going to spend any money to go watch this team next year that's only going to win 20 or 25 or however many, not many games. So, you know, that to me is really interesting. But then the conspiracy theory is that the reason that they traded the 10 pick was because they didn't want a guy that could step in and play now and score points because they don't want to win now.
And there seems to be a lot to that.
I don't know if
theory.
I can buy that. Yeah, there is when you look at it on paper, but by gosh, I sure don't know that I would like that.
Yeah, you hate to see someone not wanting to win games, but I guess the one positive out of all this, in addition to the fan reaction being generally favorable, is that the 76ers at least seem to have a plan, and that's something that's drastically different now from what the Phillies apparently are doing, which we can talk about in a little bit. The Phillies don't seem to want to tell you what their plan is. The Sixers at least have a plan. They're going to be really bad for a couple of years. They're going to acquire lots of draft picks and then start going after the free agents and put this team together, which apparently is going to have Twin Towers. It's going to have a point guard in Michael Carter-Williams. And then you're going to add bits and pieces to that. And then, you know, 2 years from now, get the guy from Croatia. And, hey, they could be a powerhouse in 3 years. But at least Sam Hinkie and company have a plan that they are sticking with. And as you said, Bill, most of the fans seem like they are okay with it.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of that and speaking of the Phillies, let's slide over there just a little bit. I'm curious if you take the same philosophy. And obviously the fans are in a major uproar right now because the Phillies are not playing very good. But let's just say, hypothetically, because this obviously wouldn't all happen, let's just say they came out in July and traded Hamels, Lee, Utley, Rollins, Howard, and Bird, and Ruiz, and said, we're blowing it up. We're starting over. We're going to stink for the next 5 years. Do you think the Phillies get the same reaction from the fan base that the 76ers get, or does all the blame go on Ruben Amaro Jr. for stinking the place up?
Boy, that would be really, really interesting. I would be okay with it. I know it's going to be tough for a lot of fans to swallow something like that. Attendance would certainly take a nosedive. I mean, it's already gone from a sellout every night for, you know, three seasons in a row down to an average of 31 or 32,000 per night. And that's with some, you know, things like the Rollins hit record, some bobblehead nights, three nights of fireworks. You take all that stuff away, the dollar dog nights, and they'll be lucky to get 15,000, 20,000 fans. I don't know what the fan reaction is going to be. I don't think the fans will be quite as forgiving as 76ers fans have been, but it's going to be really, really interesting to see what does happen, because Ruben kind of hinted the other day that there will be some changes made. I don't know that he's going to get rid of, you know, all those guys you mentioned. I'm sure he's not. They're not going to blow it up like that. But I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Papelbon goes, if Marlon Byrd goes, maybe a Ruiz once he's healthy. I don't think Cliff Lee's going to go now. I think that's going to be an off-season thing just because of the injury that's going to keep him out until probably right before the July 31st deadline, or certainly close to it. Yeah, the fans may not be quite as forgiving as the 76ers, because that's a lot of nights to watch some potentially very bad baseball, even worse than we're seeing with the so-called major leaguers out there now.
Now, let me ask you, because maybe you got a more recent update than I did on Cliff Lee, but my understanding is he pitched on Sunday in Clearwater, only pitched about an inning and got rained out, and is supposed to pitch again tonight and get a few more innings in. So I didn't realize that he was all the way out till the end of July. I thought he was they were looking at him not long after the All-Star break to be right back in the fold.
Oh, yeah, no, I heard nothing worse than that. But, yeah, he is supposed to pitch tonight after the just two-inning rain affair on Sunday. But keep in mind, we have the All-Star game next Tuesday. So, I mean, that already puts you at mid-July. So I'm talking about, in my mind, somewhere around July 20th at the very earliest that he would be back. So, to me, that's late July once you get past July 20th.
Gotcha. Okay. I didn't know if there was something that that I was not aware of.
No, I hope he's on schedule.
All right, let me ask you, you know, Chase Utley was selected to his sixth All-Star game in the fan voting. It's also his first since 2010. After amazing start that he was so hot, but he's cooled down a good bit. He's hitting .292, 7 homers, 45 RBIs. You know, the Phillies have to have a representative on that team, as does everyone else. How do you feel about the fan selection of Utley?
It's a real nice honor for a guy who's been a warrior for this ball club for more than a decade now, and who's battled back to overcome some serious knee problems a couple of years ago, injuries that had me, anyway, convinced that Utley's All-Star days were behind him. So even with his June swoon after a great first 7 weeks of the season, he is having a solid season. Had a couple of key hits last night, too, and it's great to see him starting in the midseason classic for a sixth time. So, you know, it's good for Utley. I hope he does start to pick it up again, just as he has in Milwaukee. His numbers aren't bad, you know, despite the fact that he didn't really hit it all in June. What, he hit .220 or .230 or something like that. He was hitting .330, of course, in mid or late May. He's down to .292 now after all that, which isn't terrible. And, I mean, if they could see him hit .280 or .290 for a full season with, you know, 13 home runs, which he's on pace for right now, and 80-plus RBI, I would certainly take that from a guy who's in his mid-30s now and who I thought was pretty much in obvious decline a couple of years ago. He's come back pretty strong. I just personally would like to see them give Utley and Rollins more days off than they do. Ryan Sandberg seemed to indicate that would be happening this year, but those guys are out there most of the time. I know Rollins did sit out, I guess, last night or the night before. Utley does get an occasional day off, but I think they should get more time off than they are. But to get back to your point, a real nice honor for Chase Utley going back to the All-Star game, and I think it is well-deserved this year, even if you consider that there aren't a whole lot of great second basemen in the National League right now. It's a nice honor for Utley and nice of the fans to see that he has done pretty well this year and vote him in.
Yeah, I was real pleased with it as well. I was a little worried that as he tailed off so much that, you know, he would lose some of the national appeal, you know, from the voters. But he held on, and as we said, the Phillies have to be represented, and you know, there's nobody better on this present them than Chase. And interestingly, though, watching the Pittsburgh series, and I watched pretty much the whole entire thing, and as painful as it was, I thought I saw something from him, you know, at the plate that I just don't remember seeing before. And it looked to me like, you know, he always has that stoic look when he comes up in the batter's box and he's, you know, with the game face on. But it almost looked to me like he was scanning the field and staring at the area that he wanted to hit the ball to. And when that didn't happen, you know, when he wasn't getting the pitches where he was looking for them to hit to where he wanted to hit to, he was struggling at the plate. Weak grounders, and he was striking out a little bit. It just almost looked like he was up there just thinking too much. Instead of going up, saying, okay, I'm in a situation, I'm going to drive the ball accordingly and let things happen. And it almost looked like he was just pressing too much. So I was real glad to see him break out of that here in the last couple nights in Milwaukee.
Yep, me too. Yeah, you may have something there. I didn't notice that, but that's certainly something to keep an eye on.
Okay, well, while we're talking Phillies, let's jump over to our Philly Press Box Radio audio clip of the week. I think you'll like it. It's a classic, and it starts out slow because it's just a routine play that turns into a special play. Here you go.
The J roll, there goes Chase, and this is chopped to McBride, who
Chase is going to keep going, and he's safe at home plate.
Wow.
Chase Utley, you are the man. Wow.
Boy, that call has lived for several years now. We love hearing that, and, you know, you hear fans say that a lot. Chase, you are the man. Something that I think Harry just came up with on the spot. And, yeah, he was right. Utley was the man right there. He's always been just a heads-up player, always knows what's going on the field, keeps an eye on the situation, and he's going to take the extra base when he can. He's going to make the play in the field, you know, whenever possible. So a great call by Harry right there. Chase Utley, you are the man. Love that one.
Me too. And you know, it was what I liked about it, you know, as exciting as Harry always seemed to make the ball game, you could tell the game was kind of in a situation where it probably wasn't all that exciting, and I don't remember exact details of that particular game, but, you know, it's a routine ground ball. You can tell by the way Harry's calling it. And Chase makes that play. Harry makes a great call, and years later, we're still talking about it.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Well, let's talk about Jonathan Papelbon. As you know, I've been on the Papelbon bandwagon from the start when he got shelled in the opener, in the opening series in Texas. I was still behind him all the way, and not many people were. So I'm calling him not being selected an all-star snub. At this point, he's got two wins and a loss, a 1.37 ERA, 21 saves. He's given up 5 runs all season, and he's only given up 3 runs in all of his, or only given up runs in 3 of his 29 appearances. And I wanted to give you a little tidbit of information on Papelbon that I thought was interesting. In the 3 games that he's given up runs, one of those games was in April, one is in May, and one is in June. The rest of those months have been days in between have been clean. You don't get much better than that, what do you think?
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly. He's been a real pleasant surprise for me. Yeah, he had the awful first outing in Texas, I guess it was, back in April, the first week of the season. And I forget what happened in May where he gave up a run. And then in June, he just gave up some cheap hits, basically, that cost Cole Hamels a win, of course. in late June. So, yeah, Papelbon has been a real pleasant surprise. Everybody, including this guy, I admit it, was pretty much ready to write him off this spring, especially after that first bad outing. But he's come back real strong. He's managed to stay focused, even though things haven't exactly gone well for our Fightins this year. 21 saves. You mentioned the ERA of 1.27 or whatever it is. He's been really, really good, much better than I thought. The fastball, even if it's only 92 or occasionally 93, seems to be moving a little better than it did last year, fooling more hitters than he did last year. So, yeah, I'm going to consider it a snub, too, from the All-Star people. I got to be honest, I haven't compared his stats to the guys who are going to the game next week, but Papelbon certainly seems worthy with the numbers that he's put up this year.
I'm with you, and I have not either gone and compared everybody that did make it, but if you only give up runs in three games out of the whole entire first half of the season, that's pretty good. Okay, we have a caller, Chet. Let's grab that right quick before we put you on the Philly Press Box Radio hot seat.
Let's do it.
Hey,
hello,
go ahead. You're
Jim
on the Shop for Kissing.
How are you?
Online. Hey, how are you? Is this Mark?
This is Mark. Yep.
Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm enjoying my first 2 days of retirement, so... I'm getting a chance to stay up late, and now I can become a regular listener again, you know, to that point. I'd like to just chirp in against with Papelbon. I agree with both of you guys on that. I was quite surprised he wasn't on that list, and he's had a superior year for him, and I'm kind of disappointed that we have to trade him, but... it seems that the inevitable is going to happen there. I think on the Philly scenario, my only concern is about making too many changes. He's still allowing Amaro to make them. You know, it's kind of hard to see what's happened since 2010 when they won 102 games and were so competitive. You got spoiled. And Philly fans really, really got spoiled. So from a guy who saw a lot of losing teams in the 50s and 60s and then saw the Luzinski, Eboa, and Schmidt regime start in the mid to late 70s and get to the World Series, watching the erosion of this championship squad from 2007 and 8 is very disappointing. And I'll agree, Chet, with you that if the Phillies broke up big time, it would be a longer and tougher sell for the public than the Sixers. I get a little suggestion for the Sixers. Maybe they would consider, if they could, getting the Washington Generals on their schedule for about 10 or 15 games. and maybe that would help their record out, and you sell some more tickets, at least give them more competitive. So the fans who are paying for the next couple of years will feel like they're seeing something. I think they do have a bright future. There's no question on that. But I don't know. The patience level is there. It's been since 1983 for the Sixers. And that's kind of a situation for that organization. You waited 31 years, and you're still waiting, where the Phillies are still fresh. So rebuilding is, you're looking at two different levels on that. So I just wanted to call in, and you stole my thunder with the Papelbon, because that's who I really wanted to talk about. And, you know, like I said before, I think the next 2 weeks will be very interesting time for both teams that have become a disappointment. And then, of course, my Birds will be on the field starting their training. And I have a lot to look forward with them, that's for sure. So, guys, good talk to you. Keep up the good work. And give Chet a hard time tonight, Philly. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm getting ready to get after him, Mark.
Yeah, test him to the best. And behave yourselves. All right? Good talking
Thanks,
to you.
Thanks, Mark. Mark. Good luck in retirement.
Thanks,
enjoy.
Exactly.
Thanks, buddy. Bye-bye
okay.
now.
Yeah, Bill, we're going to have to contact Red Klotz and those Washington Generals. You know, Red Klotz is still alive. He's 92 years old. Can you believe that?
Yeah, that's I just read that, actually. There was an article about him just recently that came out.
How about that?
You know, I think Mark, you know, obviously he's just one person, but I think his point is well made. The Phillies fans are not going to take this near as patiently as the Sixers fans.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. You ready for some rapid fire, partner?
Let's do it.
Okay. We've got 11 questions for you. All right? You'll put your thinking cap on. Let's see what we got.
Okay.
First one, I'm going to hit you with a question that you hit everybody up with that you've done rapid fire with, and so I'll hit you with it. Which is your favorite Philadelphia sports team?
Oh, man. You know, that's a tough one, but I'm going to have to go football because the Eagles only play 16 games, and you just look forward to those games so much every year, every week. You plan your weekend around those games, and now even in the off season, you're watching, you know, the draft and the player moves and everything. So because it's a year-round thing now, I'm going to say the Eagles would be my favorite football.
All right. That doesn't surprise me. Okay, shifting to baseball. Other than the obvious Mike Schmidt, Steve Carlton, who is your favorite all-time Philly?
I'm going to go back to where it all started for me back in the mid-60s when I started watching. I guess it was around 66. And we're talking Richie Dick Allen. I just loved watching him play. We talked about him, you know, several shows back, and he was one of those guys that you just couldn't wait to see him come up next and see if he's going to hit one of those tape measure home runs with the 42-ounce bat. I loved watching him play. He was one of the first guys I really wanted to see in person and who I did get to see in person at Connie Mack Stadium. So he was probably my first favorite Philly, Richie Allen.
All right. You graduated from Penn State. Are you a big Penn State and college football fan?
I'm a Penn State fan more than a college football fan. I know some guys will plan their entire Saturday around what games are on TV, but for me, it's mostly about Penn State. I had season tickets, of course, when I was out there as a student back in the late 70s, and I went to several games after graduating. Don't get out there nearly as often as I would like to now, but I still try to watch Penn State football whenever they're on. And, you know, who didn't love Joe Paterno when he was out there? And I wish the new guy, Mr. Franklin, all the best. So, yeah, I'm definitely more of a Penn State fan than a college football in general fan.
Okay, as a follow-up to that, do you have a favorite all-time Nittany Lion player?
Wow, that's a great question, and believe it or not, I don't. I mean, you know, all the great linebackers that were out there, Todd Blackledge was there when I was out there working in town. I actually had a class with Chuck Fucina back in the late 70s, and I got to know him a little bit. So I did like Chuck Fucina back in 77, 78, 79. But beyond that, no, I do not have one true favorite Nittany Lion.
Okay. Shifting over, we're going to cover all the bases here. So shifting over to the Flyers. You are, for the moment, Ron Hextall. And of the current roster, who do you move first and who is the most important guy to move?
Well, you got to do something with Vinny LeCavalier right now because, I mean, if he came back, it would just be a bad situation. He would know that he's not wanted there. And, you know, they're just going to have to try to find some way to get him out of town, get somebody to take that contract. I know he's signed for the next 3 years or whatever. So that's the most important thing, finding a new destination for Vinny. He's a great guy, but apparently he just does not have a whole lot left. So that's the key. And then I would just beef up the defense a little bit, however I could. So, I mean, a lot of people say the Flyers are close to being a contender. I still think there's some work to do. They got to beef up the defense a little bit more. God, I wish we could get Chris Pronger healthy again, but that's not going to happen.
Oh, that's for sure. Okay, Mike Richards or Claude Giroux?
Ooh, pro Giroux. I still think there's a lot of upside for Giroux. We're just going to forget about that little incident a week or two back. I think on the ice, Giroux is still the guy. He got off to a poor start last year. I think he's going to come back strong this year and play a full season, hopefully, and hopefully lead the team back to the playoffs and a little bit deeper run this time around. So, yeah, Giroux for me.
Okay. Shady McCoy or Brian Westbrook?
Shady McCoy. I mean, loved Westbrook. Great guy. Versatile. You know, he gave you a little bit more than McCoy in that he could also return punts or kicks if need be. But just on pure talent and still a major upside, Shady McCoy.
Okay. Now I'm really going to make you think because I know I'm getting into your area here. Charles Barkley or Allen Iverson?
Pretty close as far as where they rank in terms of all-time Sixers, but for me, it's Barkley. I loved everything about Charles Barkley, on the court, off the court. I know there were a few warts along the way, but loved to watch the guy play when he was here, loved him even after he moved on, and now I still enjoy him when he's on TNT or a late-night talk show. The guy is very entertaining. Iverson, there were just too many negatives for me. Great player, fun to watch, no doubt, but for me, absolutely, Charles Barkley.
I'm going to tell you that you surprised me on that one. I thought you had
wow.
a man crush on AI.
No.
Okay. Now here's the Philadelphia million-dollar question. Randall Cunningham or Donovan McNabb?
For me, absolutely Randall. I know McNabb's overall numbers are probably going to look a little bit better. More playoff appearances with the Eagles, certainly. But just as far as entertainment value and, you know, fun to watch a guy I really, really enjoyed watching play, it's going to be Randall. Maybe I surprised you there, too. But, yeah, Randall Cunningham.
Well, I really wasn't sure how you were going to go on that. That's, you know, that's a split. You could talk to 1,000 people and go 500 and 500 on that.
Yeah.
Question.
Yep.
Okay. What is your favorite all-time sporting event that you have attended?
Wow. That is a great, great question. The one that stands out for me was I was there in 1993 sitting in the left center field area of the stands when the Phillies beat the Braves to go to the series. So 1993, being there for the clincher, watch, you know, Mitchie Poo nail it down and the celebration on the mound, that's definitely one that stands out for me, 1993.
Very nice. Good one. Okay, last question. What is the one thing about you as a Philadelphia sports fan people don't know?
Interesting. The one thing that people don't know.
Kind of like our buddy Kevin McClure is a Rangers fan. You know, we didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, I like all the Philly teams. Probably that I'm not the great basketball player that most people think that I would have been. I was not a good shooter. Also, although I played varsity baseball in high school, I'm ashamed to admit that I had four errors in one game once, three of them in one inning at shortstop. If people could boo you at a high school game, I'm sure a lot of people were silently booing me that day.
All right. Good answer. And you have survived your own rapid-fire hot seat.
Let's not do this again. Thanks, Bill.
You sweating, buddy?
I'm a little sweaty right now.
I was when I got done the other week as well.
Yes, indeed.
Well, let's move on. Let's take a break for a second. Let's thank our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase you make gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. That's 484-319-8043. Okay, just as a reminder, those www.shopforkisses.org phone lines are open at 929-477-2855. So feel free to give us a call, as Mark did, throughout the remainder of the show. Okay, partner, what's on your mind?
I was just looking at the Phillies pitching statistics, and do you realize that if you, you know, double the numbers, or actually a little less than double them, at the end of the season, the Phillies would not have one double-digit winner among their pitchers this year. A.J. Burnett leads with 5 wins right now, believe it or not. Then you got, you know, Cliff Lee with 4 wins. Bastardo somehow has 4 wins. David Buchanan has 4 wins, which all that, one more than Cole Hamels at 3. So they would not have one double-digit winner among their pitchers this season, which is just amazing. And I don't know when the last time that ever happened for the Phils.
You know, that is amazing. And I think we'll have to research that, because I don't know that I ever remember it happening or ever hearing about it happen. That's that's really interesting.
And A.J. Burnett, who's got 5 wins right now, you know, is a possible trade bait guy, so he may not even get the chance to get double-digit wins with the Phillies this year. You got to think if Hamels sticks around that he can win 7 games in the second half, but the way they rarely score for him, he did get a win the other night, thank goodness. The way they rarely score for him, maybe he won't. Who knows? But, yeah, that's something to keep an eye on. One of those dubious statistics that you don't want to see happen, but it just might happen.
And you know, I don't have the statistics right in front of me here while we're on the air, but I think that you could add on top of that that they also do not have a 300 hitter. I believe Ben Revere is still the leading hitter on the team of guys that are playing somewhat regular, and I believe he's at 294, correct?
Yeah, he's at 294, and is that the weakest 294 you've ever seen in the history of baseball?
Well, you know what? The guy gets all – I'm going to say that, and, you know, I kind of like Revere, although I don't like the fact that he has hit with no power at all. But, you know, he's hitting 294 with 25 stolen bases. They have far, far bigger problems than Ben Revere.
Oh, they do. But, yeah, he's hitting 294, but his on-base percentage is only 316. Slugging percentage is only 355. So, yeah, thank goodness he's got that speed and can steal you a base, because he's not going to do a whole lot more for you right there. So we got to talk about Dom Brown. I know he hit a home run last night, but what do you see happening with him? How is this going to play out? I mean, he's just horrible to watch out in left field. Over the weekend in Pittsburgh, he misread another ball. Don't these guys learn that you take your first step back? He seems to take the first step inward and watch the ball go over his head far too often.
Yeah, you know, he's not very good out there. Ain't you? Last night he almost got handcuffed by a line drive as well. He went to his left and kind of jammed on the brakes and made the play, but it sure had ugly written all over it. I'm going to say this, Chad. I think that they are going to move him. I think they're going to have to move him. He, you know, he may be able to be a player somewhere else in baseball, maybe where they could put him back to right field, where he was at least a little more adequate than he is in left field. Put him back right field and maybe get with somebody, that, as we said the other week, maybe get back with Wally Joyner or somebody like that that can get some hitting out of him. But he's been given so many chances here in Philadelphia and been given jobs and just can't hold on to those jobs.
Yeah, I think his time is nearly up here, and I think right field would be a better fit for him. And the guy does have a pretty decent arm, but it's just, you know, reading balls where he's got the problem. And, of course, you know, you do want to see more hitting out of him than 227 or whatever he's at right now. So I'm interested to see where Dom Brown's going to end up. I want to see what their long-term plans are for center field. Are they going to stick with Revere? I got to think they're going to trade Marlon Byrd this month because I think a contender is going to want him. And then, you know, then what do you do? Do you bring Darren Ruff up and play him every day in the outfield? And, boy, what an outfield that would be if you had Brown, Revere, and Ruff. That could be one of the worst of all time. So I'm really curious to see how this is all going to play out.
Yeah, I think that would be Brown, Revere, Ruff, colon, Ruff. They'd be rough.
Very rough,
yeah. Very rough. Yeah, I'd like to see, as we've talked before, I'd like to see Ruff get an opportunity to play. I just don't understand what it is that the Phillies don't seem to like about him. I guess if there's any drawback I see of putting him in a lineup right now, if they still have Marlon Byrd, is Marlon Byrd actually has more strikeouts than Ryan Howard. So if you have Byrd, Howard, and Ruff in there, and they're all, you know, obviously Ruff wouldn't get near 200 strikeouts because he hasn't played so much, but he's a 200 pace guy, and you have Byrd at 190, 200 strikeouts, Howard 190, 200 strikeouts, and Ruff striking out 150 times, that's not good.
Yeah, that's a lot of Ks for sure. Hey, what about Grady Sizemore? Are you hearing anything about him? You know, from what Ruben said the other day, just hinting that there are some guys when they get ready or whatever to play, I got to think that Grady Sizemore was among the guys that he was alluding to. So do you think they're going to bring him up?
I think he's going to be up very soon. And again, I think it may tie to making a move with Brown or Byrd, but I think Sizemore is definitely coming up and somebody's going out.
Yeah.
You know, and
it should be a fun couple of weeks.
Yeah, you could tell by Sandberg's the little bit of emotion that he does show, he's not too happy with Don Brown.
No, and how can you be? I mean, the guy made the All-Star team last year based on those great 6 weeks that he had. But beyond that, he's been a major, major disappointment. I mean, if you had 20/20 hindsight, of course, you would have dealt him when he was that hot prospect a couple of years ago when a lot of teams were asking about him. But right now, I mean, it's going to be tough to find a taker for Don Brown with all of his flaws, both offensively and defensively.
Agreed. Listen, speaking of Sandberg, what do you think about how this has played out for him in the first half of the season?
Boy, you know, we were so excited in the spring about the fact that he was stressing the fundamentals as far as, you know, thinking about plays, making the right move all the time. But I'm not seeing it on the field. You know, we're seeing as many or more errors as last year. We're seeing some, you know, just stupid moves, both defensively and offensively. We already talked about Brown's shortcomings out in left field, not breaking right on the ball so often. Same with Ben Revere from time to time. And we're not seeing, you know, enough bunting to advance base runners. I'm very disappointed in Ryan Sandberg. I got to be honest. I thought, you know, everybody said Uncle Charlie was, you know, not really as smart as we would have liked to have seen in the manager and that he just had the great players. Well, you know what? I'm disappointed in Ryan Sandberg because I thought we were going to get a better fundamentals guy. And, you know, maybe he knows the stuff, but it's certainly not showing up out on the field.
I 100% agree with you, and something that really disturbed me over the weekend was when Marlon Byrd struck out on the check swing, that the umpire clearly called it a strike, that the strike swinging, the ball went to the backstop, and Marlon Byrd stood in the batter's box and argued with the umpire rather than run to first.
Yeah. Yeah, I did
Somebody got to make that stop. I don't care if the guy's been playing in the big leagues for 20 years. You know, hustle, work hard, let somebody else argue for you. If you have an opportunity to get first base, you need to get first base.
I agree wholeheartedly with you on that one, Bill. Now, what about Ryan Howard? I mean, I was really hoping Howard would have a nice comeback year this year because, you know, we found out he was essentially 100% healthy from what he told us, what they told us this year. And it's not like the guy's, you know, 45. He's, what, 34, 35 age-wise. He's got okay power numbers, but he's just not hitting like you want to see him hit. He's hitting 232 or whatever it is. He's on a pace for, I guess, 28 home runs or so. got 15 right now as we approach the All-Star break, but the Phils have played 90 games already. I thought we would have seen a little bit more from Howard, and especially against left-handers. He's just not making the adjustments that we thought he would. He showed some signs of doing it early in the season, but he's again falling into some of his old habits, and I'm just real disappointed. I don't know if it's a work ethic thing or what, but I thought we'd see more from Ryan Howard this year.
Yeah, he, you know, he teased us there a couple weeks ago. He got a little hot, and when he got hot, they won. And just as quick as he got hot, he got cold, and I believe he was hitting 106 or something for about a two-week period, in which they lost almost all those games. I think they were 3-11. You know, it used to be years ago, I used to think that Rollins was the straw that stirred the drink. I think it's Howard now. You know, we've been talking about his pace for 3 or 4 weeks when he was hot there. We're like, well, he's on 30 to 35 and 110 to 120. And now we're talking he's on a 25, 27, and maybe 100 RBIs because he's done nothing for the last 3 or 4 weeks. So, yeah. I just say this about Howard. I think it's a shame. He's hurt. They can say what they want. You watch the guy run. He can't run. He can't push off the back foot. He is what he is. He's probably doing the best he can with what he's got. He's doing an awful lot of money, which, you know, they're going to pay him. They owe it to him. They signed the contract.
I gave him one extra home run. He's only got 14, not 15. So I guess he's going to pay for 25 or 26, like you said.
Yeah, I just – it's a shame because, you know, as we talked, I think it was last week, you know, the Phillies are being criticized for having this anchor of a contract. It was a good contract in my mind when they signed him, maybe a little expensive. But, you know, you can't plan on two major leg injuries that have basically crippled the man's career.
Yep, and it's a shame, too. I mean, he seems like a nice enough guy, but it's just a shame to watch him, and it's tough to watch him up there sometimes now.
Oh, absolutely. When he's flailing, you know, he's flailing at pitches, it's bad. Absolutely. All right. Well, listen, I made a mistake because I actually had a 12th question for you on the hot seat. And I had it a little down here further in my notes, but I got to throw it out here for you. And it's another comparison. All right? You ready for one more hot seat? Don't start.
One more. Let's do it.
Okay. Chris Wheeler and Sarge Matthews or Jamie Moyer and Matt Stairs?
Wow. I'm going to go Moyer and Stairs, believe it or not. I actually was okay with Chris Wheeler, but I just could never get on the Sarge bandwagon. I thought he was awful when he started, and then he progressed to okay at very best. So I was kind of glad to see him go. Wheeler, I know, took a lot of heat from people. A lot of people did not like Chris Wheeler. I thought he was okay. He would state the obvious sometimes, but I think he did know his stuff. Stairs and Moyer are still works in progress, but I actually enjoy both of them to a decent extent, considering that it is their first season. So as a package, I'm going to go with Moyer and Stairs.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Okay. Well, that is bringing us close to the top of the hour, my friend. Again, it has flown by. Discuss some interesting topics, and of course, you have survived your own rapid fire hot seat.
Yep, and it was a good thing.
There you go. Okay, we'd like to remind our listeners of some upcoming autograph signings too. MJR Sports Collectibles will be having Seth Joyner, a member of the Gang Green defense, Saturday, July 12th at his store in Newtown Square. They'll also be having Danny Briere, July 14th at the Brickhouse Tavern in Willow Grove. I believe you're going to try to go to that one, aren't you, partner?
I'm going to try to make it out to see Danny Briere. He was one of my favorite Flyers while he was here. And by the way, Seth Joyner, I met him a couple of years back, had a nice talk with him about Buddy Ryan and his career as an Eagle. And what a nice guy, Seth Joyner. So if you get a chance, go out and say hello to Seth. He was one of my favorite players when he was here. And, yeah, Danny Briere, I hope to get out there next Monday.
Well, and unfortunately, I cannot meet Seth on Saturday because of my son's wedding. But I'd like to have a conversation with Seth. He'd be a good man to talk to about my man, Reggie White.
Oh, yeah. That's for sure.
It's still on my list, my friend. All right. And MJR will also be having Nebraska Heisman Trophy winner Mike Rozier at his store on July the 19th. Okay. And our friend Carl Henderson at Carl's Cards in Havertown. We'll be having Gordy, Mark, and Marty Howe on August the 2nd. Mark that on your calendar. What a great day that'll be. And we'll also be having Bob Boone on August the 9th. Both Matt and Carl are supporters of Philly Press Box Radio, and these guys do a great job getting guests in for local autograph signings, and we hope that you can support those efforts. All right. We'd also like to remind our listeners that Philly Press Box Radio will be on vacation next week. So we will not be on, and we will return Wednesday night, July 23rd at 7 p.m. to talk all things Philly sports. What do you think, Parker? You got anything big planned?
I wish I did, but no, I will enjoy the time off, and I'm going to rest up and come back even stronger in 2 weeks when we do this again, Bill.
Well, I think in 2 weeks there's going to be an awful lot to talk about. Eagles camp will be opening up. Philly's trade deadline will be gone. I think the Flyers are going to be making some moves over the summer. We'll know a lot more about the Sixers as they go to Las Vegas and all that. So I think the next few weeks here in the heat of the summer are going to be real interesting.
Yep. Enjoy.
Absolutely. We'd like to thank Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, as well as our sponsor, www.shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. Chet, any parting words for the week?
Enjoy that World Cup final this weekend, Bill.
Well, I have to tell you, you know how I feel about that.
Yeah, I do.
But as I said, my son is getting married, so my oldest son has arrived in town, and don't you know, he wants to grab the remote control, and what's he want to put on but World Cup?
The World Cup. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness gracious. And then he acts like he's really interested in it. It's kind of like watching paint dry.
Hey, have a great time at the wedding, though, and congratulations, Phil.
All right. I appreciate it, Chet. Okay, for Jim Chetchesco, this is Bill Furman. Hoping you enjoy the show, and we'll join Philly Press Box Radio 2 Wednesdays from now, July 23rd at 7 p.m., to talk all things Philly sports. You can listen to our Facebook page at Philly Press Box Radio or on the Internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. You can also listen to all the podcasts of all the shows we've done so far, and there have been some good ones. So high hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.